All right, welcome to another episode of Beckham's Basement. This is episode 64 for all of us keeping track, and we've had a busy week of football. Of course, last weekend, crazy in the Premier League. Nick, that Liverpool game was crazy. Robbo getting subbed out, sent off 17 minutes in. City again. I mean, what a fumble at the goal line that was. They lead until the 88th minute, 1-0, and they just cannot close the door on anyone. They end up losing to United in the Manchester Derby. We said that would be the match of the week. It didn't get there until the final 2 minutes plus stoppage time, but United pull it out. Pep, on film, angry, wants to get into fist fights with United supporters who are, you know, obviously going to heckle him. But a lot to talk about, but Nick, first of all, I want to ask you how you're doing. How was your week so far? You and I, we haven't talked in a couple of days. It's been a minute. So how are you doing? Let's get caught up real quick. What was your weekend like?
Good, man. Everything's good. Happy to have Tactical on.
Well, we haven't gotten that far yet, man. Hold on now.
Why are you spoiling it?
Yeah.
Slow down.
Yeah, what are you doing?
Slow down.
Yeah, I got to spoil it, man. This has been something I've been waiting for and looking forward to for a long time, man. I mean, I've been tweeting back and forth. He probably doesn't know my handle, but from when Santos got relegated to even when the USA took the Nations League Cup from Mexico a couple times, like, we've been back and forth in a good way a lot. And now to finally be able to have him on is great. But I'm doing good, man. It was awesome to watch Pep bum fumble. It was great to see Liverpool come back and draw.
Yeah.
Chelsea on a roll. Good week of football. Botafogo are champions. Real Madrid's about to play Pachuca, which is another thing I want to get to talking about. And yeah, man, just a lot of football and very, very happy. Well, Nick, I'm in heaven.
You know that I was on the kit burning trail last weekend with Robertson. I said the kit's going to go in the fire pit. We're not even going to. I'm not messing around this time. I'm going to give you the autographed rookie card of his for Liverpool. I'm like, I'm done with this guy. He's burned too many bridges with me. Red card after red card. Insanely stupid challenges near or in the box. And just, I mean, it's not even like you, Nick, we've talked about this Father Time thing. It's not Father Time. This is just judgment. This is just judgment calls, man. You've got to be smarter mental than that. So, but without further ado, we do have a special guest in the house. Yes, longtime follower of his channel. Nick, I know you even longer than me, but tactical manager, our friend Filippo, is joining us. We're going to talk a little bit about MLS, United States Men's National Team. And Filippo, we have a very special question for you then about the Brazilian national team and what in the world is going on there since 2014. I mean, the German massacre, they've never really recovered since then, it seems like, especially on the World Cup stage. But you having that beautiful Brazil scar from the back, we want to talk, just touch on some Brazil football. And Nick is a huge, huge follower of the National League down there. I keep up with it through him. Santos getting relegated. We had a whole episode on that last
season. They're back.
Yes, they got back promotion, but yeah. How monumental that was in terms of like over 100 years, no relegation. So, but Filippo, introduce yourself real quick to the listeners, tactical manager.
Well, first, thank you for having me, guys. The only thing I'm upset here is when you opened the episode, you said this was episode 64. We should have waited five more and I would have made it right on time. But it's fine. It's fine. I wasn't aware that it was 64, but otherwise I would have pushed it a couple weeks. But
yes.
As you already introduced, Filippo from Tactical Manager TV, mainly covering the U.S. men's national team. Obviously, that extends to MLS, anything U.S. soccer related. I'm sure we're going to touch upon like USL at some point, the Americans abroad. And I'm Brazilian American, so that's probably why he also mentioned the Brazilian league. It's a league that I do follow closely as well. Nicholas is even wearing a Palmeiras jersey today, which is my team in Brazil, my club in Brazil. And yeah, I think that's all for the introduction. Otherwise, I'm going to take too much time.
So before we start, I'm going to let Nick take the first step. I will have you know that Nick has told me specifically that if he dies, anytime, if he dies before me, that I am to take his ashes to Brazil and put them outside the Palmeiras Stadium.
I can help with
I'm not
that.
Kidding.
I can help with that. But hopefully you don't die anytime soon, but I can help with that.
No. It's just, you know, we have silly drivers here inside. Myself was included. on Friday almost in a fatal crash. I mean, I'm here, but I mean, just we have some silly drivers here. Yeah. So if something happens to Nick, I've told him your last will and testament will be respected. I will take my happy ass on a plane to Brazil, and you will have your ashes spread across up the stadium. So, all right, yes. Nick, go ahead, man. Let's start. Let's kick this bad boy off.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, you know, first we just had the MLS Cup final where Mr. Reus got to finally hoist a champion's trophy. And, you know, the German media didn't take it seriously. And I guess, you know, the question begs, I want to get tactical side of this. How serious and how much how happy should have Reus been? Is the MLS Cup something that he can sleep in his bed with at night? Can he put it in his trophy case and be proud of? Or is this something the German media is just pushing to the side on too much? Like, is it something that that he should be proud of? I want to get your take on that.
Me first?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, he should be proud of it. He won Major League Soccer. It is still a professional league. It is a competitive league. I'm very critical of MLS, just to make it clear. You guys definitely know that. But I don't see why he wouldn't be proud of it. I mean, of course, this is not winning the Champions League. It's definitely not as big as winning the Bundesliga 2, especially in the country that he grew. But I can understand them downplaying it in the sense of like, yeah, you didn't win the Bundesliga or whatever. You didn't win the Champions League. But I mean, it's still a trophy. He should be proud of it. And it does count for his career. I don't know why it would be ignored. It's not like he won it's not a summer tournament, right? It's a legitimate tournament that he won. And he should be proud of it. Yeah, I think he should.
Well, some of the problem is...
absolutely.
So to your point, though, Nick, some of the problem is that the German... I listened to sort of the criticism of it. A lot of them said, well, Royce finally won a domestic league title. His only two trophies are DFB Pokals, which, I mean, there's only a handful of teams in Germany that even take that remotely seriously. So the consensus was the league is oversaturated with teams. The playoffs, everybody gets in. You now have these best of threes. It's almost like NBA playoffs. It's like, you know, it's not even a home and home. It's not even a traditional two-leg fixture. It's now best of three. So Messi felt the wrath of that, where he won the first game with Atlanta. Then they, what was it, Nick? They had a penalty shootout in the second leg?
Yeah.
To try and get to the third?
You have to go to a penalty shootout.
Yeah, yes. So I didn't even know that, to be honest with you, Filippo. I didn't know, because when Nick tells me, he's like, oh, Atlanta forced the game three. And I'm like, what do you mean they forced the game three? This isn't the MLB. This isn't Major League Baseball. Like, what do you mean they forced the game three? It's like, yeah, the playoff format. So it's almost like MLS is moving further and further towards the American franchise system, like the NFL or the NBA. And I feel like they do need to remember that this is football, and it's a game that the Europeans and the South Americans did long before they ever even thought of it, did to perfection. And it's almost like they're Americanizing the league even more, and there's more teams coming in next season. Is it San Diego, Nick, that's coming in?
San Diego.
And it's becoming what it was when it first started. It's just blown up, and I'm not sure. I think the Europeans have a problem with the way that it's structured in the format, and also one of the big things, Nick, you and I've talked about a lot, Filippo, ProRel. ProRel is the major factor in the fact that the Europeans cannot get behind a league where you are not relegated for finishing last.
Yeah, I think that when we go into that, we start to get into the issues with MLS, which everything you mentioned there, I've been very vocal about, and I agree with it. But I do think when it comes to the Europeans criticizing that or getting behind it, I think it's more of like them just being a little bit of an elitist mindset about it, and this is ours, not yours. I do agree that MLS should be an open system. It should have promotion relegation. I like the playoffs, but I don't like when you push the playoffs to a silly format of best of three. Try to change. What are we going to do next? Best of seven, like the NBA? Like, no,
right.
That I agree with. But I still don't agree when anyone in Europe is trying to downplay the fact that Marco Reus was able to win it, right, with the Galaxy. Still won a trophy with him. It's still a legitimate tournament. I would say it's a much better accomplishment than winning the Bundesliga with Bayern over the past decade for many, many other players that were there. Like, let's say, whatever, a backup at Bayern won the Bundesliga, right? Got a few bench minutes here and there. So what? Like, okay, Bayern won, what, 10 out of the last
11 in a row.
11 in a row. So
yeah,
the Bundesliga is still huge. It's a much better league than MLS. I'm not even debating that. But, I mean, it is, if you look at the diversity of teams that win it, it's much tougher to win an MLS Cup. Obviously, if you get Bayern or Dortmund, they would win it. I get that. But I don't want to
doubt. Don't be so sure about Dortmund. I'm not so sure.
No, they would find a way to screw it up in the last game.
Yes.
At the end of the day, it's a trophy. It shouldn't be downplayed. Of course, winning MLS Cup is not winning the Champions League. It's not winning the Libertadores. It's not winning the Bundesliga. Of course. But he won a domestic league, right?
Yes.
I don't know, man. It's like, it does feel like Europeans at times try to downplay that. You mentioned also, I think, Ellis, right, from away days. He did a vlog on the LA Galaxy Sounders. Yeah, I think the problem with the two is because of the way the world is these days, and sometimes we have to be politically correct, when someone goes to another country, they're almost never going to be honest about their opinion. That's one of my issues, because he also went to an Orlando City game. I don't remember the details, but he seemed to say he spoke well of it, right? He spoke highly of it.
He said Sounders and Galaxy was a proper match.
Yes, and I've been to many Orlando City games. I'm sorry, it's mostly crap. Mm-hmm. It's mostly crap. I have Orlando City jerseys, been to many games, many seasons, worked with them in their first soccer school. It's mostly crap. But again, when you go to someone's country, you're always going to be kind of more careful with how you judge. Like, let's be real. It's much easier for us to talk crap about the United States. We live here. We can say whatever we want. But if a German says, you have this, we get offended. I was like, whoa, dude, it's not your country. Shut up. So I think that goes into it. And I never met Ellis in person, but I've heard people that met him. He is a extremely nice guy. Very nice guy.
Yeah.
He went to the Inter Miami game here, and the guys from AC Momento that were working with him, they're like, Filippo, you have no idea. This guy is one of the kindest guys you'll ever meet in your life. So I'm not saying ignore what he's saying. Yeah. I don't think he's lying, but I think he's probably one of those guys that he's like very nice. He's going to hold back. Maybe one thoughts here and there. I don't know. I would actually want to talk about him off camera. But the thing with it is, like, we can dive into the issues with MLS without also downplaying someone that wins it, right? I mean, Messi didn't win it, right? So again, it's like, so that's something to bring up. I'm very critical of MLS, but I'm not for downplaying when a player wins it, if that makes sense.
So two things to that. One, the other criticism from the Germans was that Galaxy would have won it without Royce. He's like, he is literally your tag along guy. We talked about, you know, if you're Choupo-Moting for Bayern, you're backing up Lewandowski. You're getting a Bundesliga medal, a gold medal, and a trophy just for breathing air on the and wearing a Bayern kit. Lewandowski is the number nine. You're the guy that plays DFB Pokal games and Champions League matches versus Red Star Belgrade. You're not playing when it matters. So they were like, not only did Royce play limited minutes, but he also came in mid-season to a team that they said, well, Galaxy didn't need him in the first place. He basically latched on like an aging star to like Real Madrid and basically, you know, sat backed up Mbappe to win a trophy. And so I understand that a little bit. Ellis was kit shopping with Royce a couple days before that on his channel, which is a great video. If anybody hasn't checked it out, look at Marco Royce talks about his career, that it wasn't about the money of MLS. He wanted to pick the right, you know, situation for himself. The Dortmund departure, kind of nastier than people may think, really forced out of the club. Him and Mats Hummels were shown the door. But the other thing is, on Ellis's video of that, Filippo, that I want your take on, there was a tweet that he specifically decided to show and pointed out that one of his followers said, within the next 10 years, the MLS will be a top 7 league in the world. How do they get to that point? Because we know that's not the fact right now. Nobody's saying that's a fact. I mean, I can name you 5 leagues in Europe right now that are like, just off the top of my head, that are better. The top 5. I mean, France, Germany, Italy, Spain, It who am I forgetting, Nick? And England, thank
England.
you. Well, there you go. We could talk about Eredivisie, we can talk about the Portuguese league, and there's plenty of leagues in South America, I believe, trump MLS. But what can MLS do, Filippo, to get into the top seven?
Well, first, it's very funny when I see these comments because I've seen it for years. You MLS is going to be a top five league by 2026. MLS is going to be a top this, top that, and I would argue they're not going towards that direction. MLS right now is going more towards stagnation than actually like exploding right now. I mean, look, first and foremost, there's a 0% chance that they will be a top seven league if the salary cap doesn't, to a bare minimum, like triple or quadruple. That's the first thing. Anyone, the problem is a lot of these people say these things of like top 10, and they're completely oblivious and ignorant about what the league actually is. What are the spending rules? How much can a team, because the team can, the salary cap is like 5 million or something, close to six. That's not enough.
Wow.
Like, of course, you have the
No.
designated players that then you can go over that cap. But
Yeah.
transfer fees also count towards the designated player card. There's a bunch of like rules and regulations that it's just not going to work that way. And what qualifies a top league, right? Because you can also increase spending and not be that. Saudi Arabia is probably spending more than you need to be a top league, and they still aren't. I think when it comes to a top league, there's a few elements that go into it. One is spending. That is important because you need to bring the quality players, right? The veterans or players in their prime that you even mentioned earlier in this video. The other thing that has to drastically improve in MLS is youth development. You have to be like developing so many good players that are coming out of your academy that are always putting pressure on the veterans that are there or the young players that are there. And you're just continuously getting that pipeline, right? It's not the case with MLS. As much as people like to say it's improving and we have better players than we had in the past, I mean, the youth development is not good here in the US. Let's be real. It's not. Like even Christian Pulisic, he was not developed in MLS. So our best player,
Dortmund,
what?
Dortmund,
Well, Dortmund, and before that, he
yeah.
never played for an MLS Academy. Even before that, he was developed through his dad, essentially finding way
It's his dad,
in
yes.
Pennsylvania. So he wasn't through like the MLS development system, so they can't even claim that. It's like, hey, we developed a Christian Pulisic. They can claim like Alphonso Davies, but since you only got one of those, that's an anomaly. That's not the norm. So the youth development, the youth players that come out of MLS, it has to improve drastically. You need to be developing players capable of playing top
Big
five
time.
leagues because that means when they come out of your academies, that's a top five league potential player. And if you have those in your league already, it'll elevate the level naturally. So spending, youth development, and I do think culture plays a big role too. I don't think there's pressure in MLS. The fandom is very weird. I don't want to name call people, but and I'm not even going to be very direct of who I'm going to mention now. But I was even talking to a few friends when the New York Red Bulls lost MLS Cup. I saw a few posts of Red Bull fans in LA that they were like, "Yay, I was happy to be here. It's a shame that we lost." I'm not saying ruin your life because of it. I'm not saying go berserk, don't get violent, none of that. But I'll put it this way.
Right.
If the US men's national team made it to a World Cup final and they lost, I would be able to recognize that is a huge accomplishment, but I would be destroyed inside. I would not
Yeah.
be, hey, happy to be here. I would be
Yes.
completely ruined because I was like, we made it here, so we actually had a shot on winning it. But MLS fandom is not about that. They're mostly cheerleaders. They're not fans, they're cheerleaders. Sorry, that's what it is.
Yeah. That's a really good point.
They're
Yeah, I
mostly
agree.
cheerleaders. They're just there to cheer you forward.
No, you're
And
right.
that's not really what fandom's about. Fandom is love and hate, right? With it. You love the team, and then you love to hate on the team. And then you're
Yeah.
critical of it. You're passionate. You overreact. You don't just, get the pom-poms out and just like, hey, go Galaxy, go. That's not how fandom normally works. And I'm not here to
Yeah.
gatekeep or tell people how to be a fan. Each fan can be the way they are. And that's not to say other countries don't have similar fans to MLS, but you also have the passionate core base that puts that pressure, that culture that, just raises the level. I mean, we're all humans and we know how that works. We get complacent. There's no pressure to get better. And MLS needs to get rid of a lot of these like roster restrictions, right? I was even mentioning, and you're like already making a figure, like, oh my God. Start like the DP rule, the salary cap, GAM. TAM, transfer fees that count for this, and then the allocation money and draft and like just become like we do things our own way in the US for most like sports leagues, and it makes sense. We're the best in the world in those leagues. In soccer, we are not. the other places are ahead of us. So copy and pasting them on a few things or most things is not a problem. That is fine. Let's copy what works for them and try to make it better, but not do things our own way when we don't freaking know what we're doing.
So we had a roundtable, it was about 6 weeks ago, actually. Nick and I and a friend of ours who's a huge national team supporter, Tim, and we talked about, we just went into American soccer, because people think I'm talking about the Raiders for a second. Not American football, American soccer. And, you know, we were talking about, to your point about development of players, like if you have a Pulisic or a Josh Sargent or a Timothy Vea or you have a Weston McKennie, you go to Schalke, you go to Dortmund, you go to these other places because if, but what's funny about that is if you look at the German national team, for example, 75% of it is Bayern Munich. You look at that 2014 World Cup championship team and it's a who's who of Bayern Munich. Thomas Müller, Philipp Lahm, yeah. Manuel Neuer. I mean, it goes on and on and on. Toni Kroos, who I know transferred to Real Madrid shortly after, but he was a Bayern guy. Those were, I mean, it's literally, and they pride themselves on that. England, same thing. I mean, their national team, they love, you know, Foden, Pickford, all playing domestically inside their league. Spain is kind of the same, but we don't, you know, you look at our best players, they all play abroad. When is the tide shift to where you have a U.S. men's national team that can actually say we came up through the MLS, through our domestic league, and we're a top five national team in the world? Because I've told Nick, you know, before he started following, there was a time, 2006 World Cup in Germany, the United States men's national team was FIFA ranking number 4 in the world.
Mexico was 3, and right? Mexico was 3, I think.
Yeah, they were up there, both of them. And Andriy Shevchenko and the Ukraine embarrassed the United States in the group stage. They got 1 point. They did not make it out of the group. And you're ranked in the FIFA rankings number 4. And I said, that, Nick, is the closest they've been to the promised land in terms of what the world perception was. Because, like, this is the one. This is the team. Landon Donovan, you know, all those – that golden generation. Tim Howard, those guys, those were the guys. And so now you have this kind of, like – Jozy Altidore said – yeah, if you look at the talent on the current team, they out-talent us by a mile, but they didn't win the matches that we won. We never didn't make a World Cup qualification like in 2018. We always qualified. We always got to the round of 16. And he's not wrong about that, with the exception of 2006.
I mean, 2018 was Josie's generation that failed. 2018 was Josie's generation that failed.
It's funny. Well, he points.
Yeah, he should remember that. He should.
He's like, well, that's when Pulisic was coming in and taking over.
Like, and the other guys weren't there. McKennie wasn't there yet. Tyler Adams. Like,
no, he was.
Yeah, that was Josie's generation. I mean, it was those guys. Like, Howard was the goalkeeper, Tim Howard. So, but if he thinks that way, that's him. But that was his generation that failed.
Yeah. Well, he gives credit. You know, he says, like, he's like, this current iteration under Poch is more talented than we were. He has said that. He's like, we can't match them in talent. Like, none of us individually, as big as Donovan's head might be, can come close to where Pulley is. Like, we just can't. He's just a better player all around. But we were a better team. Do you agree with that? I mean, and is that where the managers of the U.S. men's national team have failed so far, and where Pochettino maybe is the right person to get them to operate as a unit?
Yeah, I think when it comes to evaluating a team, there's a lot that goes to it, right? When, if the players blend well together, if the style of play fits, if the coach gets the best out of them, there's a lot that goes into it. Leadership, right? They may say the team is more talented, but maybe that team had better leadership from the players, a different mentality. I guess that's to be determined. They definitely haven't won the games that, like, I made fun of Josie just now, but I mean, Josie wasn't that team that beat Spain in the Confederations Cup. So this team, we haven't seen them get this big signature win yet. I want to give them the benefit of the doubt till 2026. They got a proper coach now. So I think at this point, there are no more excuses. They have all the resources. They have everything they need to be successful. While other generations had to find a way to grind results. So I agree in the sense that as of now, the other teams we've seen they were more of a team. They were able to get the best out of each player and even punch above their weight. While this team, it seems like we punch below our weight, which means we're a worse team as a team. But I still want to give them the benefit of the doubt. I want to see when they play big teams under Pochettino, how we do before I draw that conclusion. But so far, yes, that is accurate. So far.
Can the United States men's national team become elite if MLS doesn't, if it stagnates?
Yeah, I think so. It can, because the youth development and popularity of the sport can increase till a point where we could become a league that's not great. Like, for example, the Argentine league these days is nowhere close to what it once was. But I don't think Argentina is going to be, I mean, sure, losing Messi is going to be a big problem for them, but they're not going to be bad. They're still going to be elite. So you can, if the popularity of the sport grows, and the sport has been growing, not because of MLS, but despite it, like it's been growing. Like the Premier League popularity is growing. Liga MX in the US is growing. Champions League, World Cup, people playing soccer. So I think that it can, yes, it can. But I mean, ultimately, yeah, you want your league to be better.
It's interesting you mentioned Messi because, and I was going to, you saying the Premier League's popular. I was, my follow up question to that was going to be, so here in Charleston, we see all these kids running around with kits, and it's always Liverpool, Man City, sometimes, you know, United, those teams. You see BVB or Bayern a lot, but, besides the pink kit from Miami with Messi's name on the back of it, what does MLS have to do to get these kids to stop buying Diogo Jota kits or Mohamed Salah kits and start buying Puig or Royce with a Galaxy?
I love that question because I have talked about this so much and from own experience. And I prefer to talk about own experience because it's always better than theory, right? So I have a soccer school here in Orlando, an after-school soccer program with elementary schools. So these are kids from ages 5 to 10, roughly. And I have over 300 kids that are registered and all that. This is in Orlando, kids that play soccer. And every year I ask them a question, like, for example, who's going to watch Orlando City this year? And I always said this, I tweeted this out once, out of the 300, obviously I don't ask 300 at once, right? Different days. And all that, just so people don't say I'm lying. It's in different days, right? It's not all like 300 kids, right? No, different days, different groups. But at the end of like a week or two, I've asked pretty much every kid registered, every group. Usually you'll get like 10 kids out of 300 that even know what Orlando City is, which is nuts, right? Wow. Because these are kids playing soccer. So you think like, oh, they would all know what the only team we have in Orlando, professional, like Division I, like first division of the United States. Most don't care. So to your point, the biggest thing is we don't have a big soccer culture here in the U.S. or we have it fragmented in different regions, different cultures and all that. But most MLS teams, if not all of them pretty much, they're franchises, right? They're not built by the community. Just a billionaire comes in there, boom, pays, stadium comes out of nowhere, and there you have it. You have a team. So the community doesn't really feel attached to that. If you go to Brazil, for example, and since Nicolas has a Palmeiras jersey, I'll quickly go through their history. They were originally called Palestra Italia, which was means it's Italy, right? The Italians from São Paulo founded a team, and it grew upon that. They had to change to Palmeiras because of World War II, the name. But it was built out of an Italian community. And you go there, you can feel that. Right? You can feel that there's a community behind it and there's a lot of history. The MLS teams don't have that because one, it's a franchise, and two, it's a new league, right? We're talking about Palmeiras, what, 115 years, 110 years of history. So it's hard to bridge that gap. The way you do it is by engaging with the community. Something I can tell that most MLS teams don't do a good job. How do you engage with the community? Like I worked with the Orlando City Soccer School when it opened, the first one, I was the head coach there. And within a whole year, they never sent a single player to go see the kids. Is it too much to ask for? A whole year, like send one player just to go say hi to the kids so the kids can see him and want to go to the game. They don't really give free tickets to the kids. They should give free tickets to the kids that are in the soccer school programs, partner with elementary schools, do jersey, like, very cheap stuff, jersey giveaways, or not even jersey giveaways. Go buy cheap, like $10 t-shirts with Orlando City. Give it away. Give away, like partner with local schools, the community, right? And that's how you're going to draw people in.
Yeah.
I'm speaking about Orlando City specifically because that's the one I see. That's the one I live, right? But I think the same thing so can I be applied to probably 20 to 25 of the MLS franchises out of the 30. So I think that's a big issue. Yeah. Like Orlando City had an opportunity to do that when they had Kaká. There's a lot of attention. They put like 60,000 people in the stadium. But if you don't get involved with the community, if you don't make them care about you, they're going to go away. And that's what happened here specifically. And to your questions, like the kids don't know. They don't know anything about these teams. They don't know crap. Wow. They know about Messi. Yeah. And honestly, if you go to Inter Miami and you tell the kids, name the starting 11, most of them don't know. They know Messi and Suarez, probably, and Busquets, I guess.
Nick, before you ask your question, to your point, exactly on this point, we have someone, so he's my friend, but he's an Atlanta United supporter, and Nick knows where I'm going with this. He was watching the playoff match against Messi and Inter Miami, I should say, not Inter Milan. And he said, yeah, they said something about, and this is how misinformed, and I put him as Exhibit A of the average casual MLS soccer fan. Because he said, yeah, he said, the announcer said, yeah, Suarez and Messi, it's like something about the 2017 Barcelona front line, whatever that means. And I'm like, 2017 FC Barcelona? You're missing Neymar, and you've got basically the best attack in the world. Like, quote unquote, whatever that means. And he's like, yeah, I don't know. Like, and I'm like, oh my God, Barcelona, like 2017 Barcelona. I said, I think that's the team that was down to PSG 4-0 or something in the Champions League, came back and won 6-1. I'm like, that's how lethal that team was. I'm like, it's amazing. It's like, it just from
that's
that, like whatever
prime
that means.
Messi and prime Nick, Suarez. They're not prime anymore. They're
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. Nick, go ahead and ask your question.
No. So we live in Charleston and we have the Charleston Battery, Filippo. And I went to the final last year. Critty was busy. I went to the final last year when we lost to the Phoenix Rising in penalties. And I met the defender Archer at my restaurant I work at last week, and he's going to actually join us next week. He's a big fan of your show. He knew exactly who you were when I told him we're having you on. He was like, oh man, hell yeah. I can't wait to hear that. And I told him that we wanted to work together, and he was totally down with working with the community. I mean, me and Critty, surprisingly, are the only podcast in Charleston, which blows my mind still to this day, but it goes to show you how small and how little the soccer football group and crowd is here in Charleston. And we have a professional team. Granted, it's the USL, which I think is better. I love it more than the MLS. That's just me. But he was totally down with working with the community, giving an interview, telling me, hey man, come out, you can talk to the fans. He's inviting the Millonarios player, the young guy that the Battery has, to come to the restaurant, hang out. And that little stuff there is what helps build the fans and the following in the United States. To piggyback off of what you're saying with Orlando, the Battery should do that more, I feel, also, because by the time the Cup comes in 2026, you have all these fans, everybody's ready, everybody's watching, and it's not just that little blip where in 2028, nobody cares about football anymore.
Well, I think that USL...
That is massive, I feel.
I think that USL and MLS have a similar problem with that, is they think they're bigger than they actually are. And yes, USL does a better job than MLS in certain things. But what do I mean by bigger than they are? It's when you start a business, for example, you have to do the dirty work. You have to maybe knock on doors. You have to grind out one or two clients, right? You don't have 100. You don't have 200, 1,000. And I think they're not willing to do these little things that are just like engaging. It's like, yeah, you're going to do a little engagement here with the community and you're going to gain 10 fans. And they're like, oh, 10 fans is not going to help me. It's like, no. You need to get these 10. Then next month you get 20 more, then 30.
Yeah.
And you build like tiny little steps. They're not big enough where they can just ignore 10 fans. Even though they think that's tiny, it's not. It's not small.
Yes,
and you get those 10. Those 10 will drag their kids or their friends' kids. It's a small and it's a slow process. And I think that, more specifically MLS than USL for this one, I think they think they're too big to do that. They're like, no, we have to do big things. It's like, you're not big.
Yeah.
That's the thing. You're not big. But they want to do big things. Like, no. Send a player to a soccer school so he can interact with 30 players. But those 30 kids, a few of them might just become very, like, I don't know, fascinated by the team because they met a professional player. Kids, they appreciate that if they see a professional player. That's what they're looking up to, even if it's not that big of a player. They don't care. But again, it's I think they think they're too big to do like the I don't even know what to call it, like this grind when you're starting.
Yeah, no, it's a grind.
The grind.
Yeah. And we have a few more questions here before we get out of here, but I did want to say this. This is in to put into perspective what we said, what would it take for those kids? Because you answered it beautifully about the community engagement. What would it take for these players to have their kids sold to the American kids? What would it take for a German kid to buy a Royce Galaxy kit over a Royce BVB kit? That's an even bigger step. Like that's an even like when, because I can tell you growing up in Germany, that all I saw when I was in the late 90s was Penny Hardaway, Shaquille O'Neal, Michael Jordan, every single American athlete who was anybody, they wore them. They bought the Bulls starter jackets, the Magic. Nobody in my school was wearing Bayern Munich jackets. They're wearing Charlotte Hornets. I don't know why Charlotte Hornets, but Chicago Bulls.
They were pretty cool.
Orlando Magic. Charlotte Hornets were cool. Lakers. And I remember the top selling jersey summer 96 was when Shaq went to the Lakers. Nobody cared about, you know, what was going on at Ajax at that time. They were coming off Champions League and BVB was about to go into win the Champions League in 97 with Matthias Sammer and those guys. And it was all about the NBA. And then the NBA has taken this nosedive recently and football's bigger than it's ever been. But when I was growing up, kids were wearing basketball jerseys of American athletes. What does it take for the MLS to get so successful and so big? We're talking about not even on U.S. soil, but what would it take for a kid in Germany or Spain or England or Italy to say, oh my God, I want that Pirlo kit from New York City FC. That's the one I want.
That might,
you know?
That might require MLS drastically increasing spending to a point where it's signing all these guys in their prime and not when they're washed. Because people like idolize Royce, Marco Royce at Dortmund, because they saw him in his prime there and how good he was. That's not the version we're getting in the Galaxy. So why would they care too much about this? So
no, it's not.
Yeah. So I think what that would take would be the league has to spend so much money where they're getting these players in their prime till a point where it's a league that, hey, you want to watch the best soccer players in the world? You got to watch MLS, which is the case with what it was with NBA and still is, right? NBA. You want to watch the best basketball players in the world? There are great leagues in Europe. College basketball is amazing, but the best players in the world are in the NBA. So I think that's what it would take. It's literally that spending. Because listen, if MLS tomorrow jacks up the salary cap to $100 million, something crazy like that, and they sign all the best players in the world, I mean, I know like all the other teams in the world, they're still going to have their supporters because that's the community and people are going to watch it. But I think people will also take the time to watch MLS because that's where the best players are. Like Barcelona, Manchester United, Liverpool, these teams are not going to die if MLS becomes huge. They're not going to die. They have the community. They're strong, the culture, everything. Way. But if MLS gets all the best players in the world in their prime, who are like let's be real, people will watch. They're like, hey, the best players are there. I got to go watch it. But they're not. It's not going to kill off these other ones. But I think that's what it would take. And then if they stay there long enough, there's like iconic moments, right? Things like that would draw the fans to probably.
So that's what I think about. If I'm thinking about, I wanted to ask this too, because that's what's going to take is more spending. If you have a 26 year old Robert Lewandowski whose contract expires at Dortmund, what's it going to take him? What's it going to take for him to go to LA City FC over Bayern Munich?
Well, that's a process, right? Yeah. One can be money if you just offer so much money that the guy can't refuse, but that would be insane, right? Like if Bayern offers 10 million, maybe MLS will have to offer 20, 25. So, and then the guy could shake and maybe, okay, now I got to go. But if MLS just does a good job on improving youth development, which just will increase the level of play across the league, if you get these players, because I mean, youth players are the cheapest players. You get them on cheap contracts, but very often they can be at a level that is already very competitive. So if you can increase that, improve the culture and bring more of the, maybe not Lewandowski, but more of the Ricky Puig, right? These players that can be playing in a top five league, but are playing here for whatever reason, money or because of that. So ideally, the first thing is the youth development has to go up. They have to be able to sign more of these Ricky Pujols in their prime or like when they're young. And then the second thing will be you probably will have to overpay some of these stars or most of them to come here in their prime because there's going to be a big rejection from them. Because you got to think about it this way too. It does reach a point in life where if you're getting paid $15 million a year or $25 million, your standard of living doesn't change, right? It's not like it's not like $300K to $600K. Your standard of living does change. But $15 million, $25 million, kind of going to live the same very good life. You're making a fuck ton of money.
Yes.
Sorry for cursing.
Nick, I know you. No, you're fine. It's all the time on this program. And Nick, I know you had some questions about ProRel.
Well, I want to say I appreciate your comments to Landon Donovan about Rhea, Filippo. He did the reverse jinx. Rhea got his goal, even though he didn't have the best match. But, you know, Landon Donovan, just he's just a mouth talking shit to me. But good comeback, Adam. That was hilarious. The promotion relegation, man, you know, League One and USL have agreed to do Pro Rel, and they're trying to work out a system to where they do League One, USL, and then I think it's the the semi-pro. So they're trying to figure that out. If that is successful, if you think in the next 2-3 years that's successful, do you think there's a way that the MLS could possibly integrate that in and maybe do like the J League did and start with maybe one team? Because the J League just started Pro Rel, you know, 8-10 years ago. And what they did was, is they just have one team and that one team goes down and then another team goes up. So they started it slowly. Now there's the two and the three, but they started slowly with one. Is that a possibility if the MLS sees that the USL and League One are doing well? Could the MLS possibly even make this a thing, or are the owners too stubborn to make this a possibility?
Yes, if you do the Pro Rel, you have to do it slowly, because if you do it super fast, it can draw a lot of bankruptcies. You got to be careful with that. But there's only a few ways I see MLS integrating USL in a promotion relegation, but I don't see how it would happen. One, there's actually only one scenario that I see MLS integrating USL. It's if USL is growing, but it's still significantly smaller than MLS, and MLS is kind of collapsing, like the ratings are going down and Apple might be wanting to pull the plug. Yeah. Then I could see MLS panicking and just like, okay, we're going to have to change our strategy. Let's talk to USL. Maybe if we do a strategic partnership here and we do like a promotion relegation, integrate everyone, get all the markets, work together, we can make it work. That's the only scenario I see it working. Now, let's go to other scenarios here that I don't think would work. Let's say USL is growing exponentially and they caught up to MLS. Okay, let's say MLS wants the Pro Rel. Why would USL want it? Why would they want it? Like, hey, we're growing.
Oh,
we caught up
to
you. Like, USL, we're not going to want it.
Yeah.
The only scenario I see it happening is if MLS's ratings continue to trend down, which seems like they might be.
Well, didn't the Apple deal fall apart? Isn't it like falling apart?
I mean, there's no like credible report to affirm that. There's a few reports here and there that lead us to believe, but there's nothing that we can say it is falling apart. But the Fox numbers were horrendous.
Yeah.
They were worse than
the
USL
terrible.
Championship
so
final. Now,
you got to think.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, exactly. A lot of people watch it on Apple, but we don't know how many. It might have not been that many. So if MLS is to collapse, by collapse, I don't mean like go bankrupt. I just mean like they're really struggling and they're like, crap, Apple's going to pull the plug. If they do that, the next TV deal will be worse. We're not being able to sell franchise fees like we used to. If that happens, I could see MLS. But for that to work, USL cannot grow too much. Because if USL sees MLS's weakness and they're growing, why would USL want to partner with MLS, right? So it has to be that perfect timing where MLS is going down, USL is going up, but not too much. And then you can see, hey, I'm growing, you're falling, there's still a big gap, let's work together. Mm-hmm. That's the only scenario I see this, unless there's an interference from US Soccer, but that's not going to happen.
Nick, I know you had some.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, with the cup coming, I mean, the chances of stuff growing is big, but I feel the USL has gained a lot of traction, man. I mean, the final for the USL was out of control. I mean, they had over 5,000 packed in Mount Pleasant, and me and Critty know it's not the biggest of towns. That place was jam-packed. And I'm telling you, with Messi goes from the MLS, they're going to lose a lot of people watching, and something's going to have to happen, man. I mean, I just wish, I don't know, man, I can wish and hope, you know. I would love to see the ProRail come so we can actually grow and become bigger on the bigger stage, because I want to compete in the cup and I want to have guys coming up. So,
well, also it's not good for the US to have leagues competing with each other. Soccer is a competition among clubs, not leagues. But right now we have leagues competing with each other. It shouldn't be that way.
Yeah, it's crazy. We're just ass backwards, man. It just makes no sense. I know you have to go, Felipe. Pachuca's playing Real Madrid right now in the Intercontinental Cup, 0-0 to the second. Mbappe started, Rodrigo started, all the big names started. Do you give Pachuca any slight bit of a chance?
I mean, it's a one-off game, right? Two professional teams, things can happen. I don't know how much Real Madrid cares. The Intercontinental Cup has lost its value for the past like 10 years. And with the announcement of the Club World Cup next year, I feel like that was the nail in the coffin. That tournament should have been done. But I guess they have, I think they have contracts with countries in the Middle East, so they might have to keep it going. I don't know, man, because Palmeiras won the Libertadores twice the past like 4 years. And I couldn't really care that much about the Intercontinental Tournament. The Libertadores was, I loved it. That was huge.
Yeah, a lot
but
of people don't.
The Intercontinental Competition, which in the past it was huge, this cup, I couldn't really bring myself to care too much. I don't know.
One final question, then I know we got to get out of here, but Nick, I know you care about this. So on the back, Brazil, let's talk about this real quick. 2014 World Cup hosts, never defeated in a major tournament on home soil. Germany comes in, whitewashes them, 7-1. Neuer was pissed at Ozil for even conceding that one goal. He wanted a 7-0 clean sheet. Instead, he got 7-1. Then the Netherlands comes in the very next game, beats them back-to-back, two European sides, beat Brazil on home soil as World Cup hosts, back-to-back. They never had lost one in their entire history. Now they've lost two in a matter of 3 days. Since then, Filippo, it seems like Brazil has just been in this sputter pattern where they're not able – I mean, they haven't performed up to their expectations, certainly in the World Cups after that, 2018, 2022 – what, there's no doubt that there's talent still. I mean, to say Vinicius, and at that time we're talking about Fabinho, Roberto Firmino was playing for them. Then you have Vinny Jr. come in later. Neymar was still there. Alisson, Ederson, you name it. Brazil does not lack talent. What is the issue in the last decade, specifically 2014 to 2024? What has gone awry with the Brazilian national team?
Oh, you kind of answered it yourself. The talent is not an issue, right? And Brazil is now heading towards a 24-year World Cup drought, which Brazil had already had that, right? They won three World Cups from 1958 to 1970. And then from 1970 to 1994, they didn't win a single World Cup. And they had a lot of talent. And during that time, you had players like Zico that some people even claim to be at like Pelé's level. And Brazil still didn't win a World Cup, and they didn't win many Copa Americas also during that time. I think it goes through cycles. The talent is still there, and sometimes it just clicks. I do think there's a big coaching issue in Brazil, and they always had that, and they were able to get away with it in the past because you put on Ronaldo, Ronaldinho, and Rivaldo in the same team. Even if your coach sucks, they'll get you the wins, right? Nowadays, it's a bit more difficult to get away with that. So I think with Brazil, it's more or less getting that coaching right. If they get a foreign coach, a competent foreign coach, right? It's not just getting any foreign coach. You can't get Greg Berhalter. That's a foreign coach. That's not going to save them. So getting the right foreign coach, I think, might be what they miss. And if they get a foreign coach, they could probably in two World Cups win one, even the next one if they get one. And just before we close, a good example is, for example, Palmeiras. Palmeiras was struggling in Brazil, and not just Palmeiras, Flamengo too. They started bringing these Portuguese coaches to Brazil, and they've been dominating. Jorge Jesus came to Flamengo, won everything. Abel Ferreira came to Palmeiras. He's been the most successful Palmeiras coach in history. And this is a team that has the most trophies in Brazil. And he's the most successful one. He's there only for 4 years. Four years. The Portuguese coach, now I forgot his name, Arthur something, he just won the Libertadores and the Brazilian League with Botafogo. So that just shows to you that there's also evidence in Brazil that the foreign coaches come in. And it's not, and these are not like, it's not like we're bringing Pep Guardiola and Jose Mourinho to Brazil. We're bringing some like average Portuguese coaches that are dominating. So I think Brazil, if they can get a foreign coach, that'll be one, a wake up call to Brazilian coaches. Like, guys, look, you can't just go like with the vibes and just like, hey, guys, just go out there, have fun, play. We're going to win.
Yeah.
There has to be scouting. There has to be preparation. There has to be professionalism. I think the biggest issue is that, because you said it yourself, the talent is there. If the talent is there, what is missing? These are players that win the Champions League. If they can win the Champions League, why are they not good enough to win the World Cup? Which is, not, I'm not saying the World Cup is easier, but the Champions League is the highest quality soccer you'll see in the world. The World Cup's the most exciting and one of the best also. But I think it's coaching and a little bit of an overreaction from people because the drought has happened before. Besides the 7-1. The 7-1 is not an overreaction. That was embarrassing, and it had never happened really before to Brazil. But the drought is an overreaction. I think coaching is the main issue. The players are there. You look at the players, like, these are fine. You can win a World Cup with these players.
Well, Filippo Silva, a.k.a. Tactical Manager, it's been an absolute pleasure. Look forward to having you on again sometime in the future. We'll do a recap on this, but tell people really quick where they can follow you and find you on socials.
You can find me on Tactical Manager TV on YouTube, on X or Twitter, whatever you call it. It's Manager Tactical, and Instagram, it's just Tactical Manager TV. And you guys already follow me there, and it was a pleasure to be here, and I will most certainly be back, hopefully with more time. We were going to have more time, but then we had some delays here and there, but yeah, I'll gladly be back here in the future.
Excellent. Hey, thank you so much again. And Merry Christmas to you. And have a happy holiday season. We will be in touch.
Thanks, Christmas. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Tack.